Welcome to episode 176 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, Jen, and John. This week, we read Sinestro Core War Part 2 by Jeff Johns, Dave Gibbons, and Peter J. Tomasi. And now, the cast begins.
I know I own this because I see this cover and it's on my bookshelf and I see it on the website and I'm sure if I clicked play I would hear myself talk about it, but I have no memory of doing this whatsoever.
All right. You guys are ready, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
What's a word? Give me a word.
I was thinking of it and I can't even, it would have to be like, have you used emotional?
Spectral?
For the emotions or spectral?
I don't think I've used emotional.
There you go.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another emotional episode of the Atomic Power Supercast. Excuse me over here, I'm letting down a single tear like Hank Henshaw. This week we read Green Lantern Sinestro Core War Volume 2, written by a bunch of people and drawn by even more. It's a lot of names. I'm just going to fuck them up. You can go Google it. it collects... Oh, God, I had it in the notes, but I know it's wrong.
Do you want me to take it?
Yeah, it collects Green Lantern 24 and 25 and Green Lantern Corps 16 to 19. 16 to 19. So I'm just going to say right off the bat, I'm not going to eat crow about last week. Because last week, I wasn't feeling it. And this week, I'm feeling it. This week feels good to me.
Really?
Yeah, I completely agree.
I like last week better.
Really?
Yeah.
What changed for you?
I don't know. I didn't dislike this one. I want to say that first off. But I feel like there was a lot of unimportant drama that I didn't care about. Like, when Guy Gardner got the virus, I was just whatever. That, and the whole thing with Sodom Yat and fighting Superman Prime... There was this whole prophecy, like, space opera around it, how he was gonna be this major figure, and there was a lot of punching, but it didn't feel as weighty as I thought it was going to be.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's something that is really, really based in old-school Green Lantern lore. I think that's something only somebody like me would get, who's been reading Green Lantern for, like, his entire life and has bothered to go back and read almost all of it. Or somebody like Jeff Johns, who would have gone back and read almost all of it. So, like, it is kind of cool, but it doesn't pan out the way it was supposed to previously. So it kind of, if you know the original story and you understand what the prophecy is in the Book of Oa, you can also then kind of understand why the Guardians are being in denial. Because Sodom Yat is in the original story, and he is part of the prophecy, but he's not really acting the way that he would according to the prophecy, if it makes any kind of sense. So it's like, it fits, but it kind of doesn't fit. And in other places it fits better, but it kind of doesn't fit. Like, the stuff that's been prophesied, basically, by that previous story with that Alan Moore had done, like, there are things that fit great and things that don't. And that's basically the prophecy in the Book of Oa, is that one issue. By Alan Moore. So he's kind of important that way. But yeah, I can see where if you didn't know that stuff, it's just kind of like, all right, lots of punching. Cool. He's a leader. Damn rookie. But we're following him anyway. What the fuck?
Yeah, I just feel like they've built up this whole, like, mythos around him. So I was expecting more at the end of the fight. Like,
expecting him not to get his ass beat by Superman Prime?
Or, like, expecting it to be more meaningful.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted something weighty where I was like, oh, they did it, and I didn't get that at all.
Yeah. I guess it's just them saying he's not there yet.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a little weight to it where he gets stabbed with that uranium rod and he can't remove his ring or he'll die. So even as Ion, he can still die if he takes off his power ring.
Yeah.
It served some sort of purpose.
Jen, did you know about the Daxamites before this?
I feel like I've read about them, but... Heard of them? Yeah, like, probably in passing. This is the most I got on them.
So you kind of get who they are, though, right?
Yeah, they fled from Krypton or something, right?
Yes.
They're the cousins of Kryptonians.
And so because they weren't there when Krypton exploded, they don't have the weakness to kryptonite that Superman does.
Oh.
Instead, their planet is a lead core or something like that instead of Kryptonian metal. So because there's his lead cord, that is his weakness.
Okay.
So he is, strictly speaking, not as good as Superman because lead is super fucking common where we live.
Yeah.
But basically, for all intents and purposes, he is on the same kind of power level spectrum as a Supergirl, Superman, Power Girl kind of range.
Okay.
Which then really confuses me in the story. Because if he has that much strength, right, then how is he, like, barely, like, how did he get beat so bad by Superman Prime when Superman Prime has been locked in the middle of a red sun, which should have been draining his power for, like, decades?
Well, I guess
years.
The place where he got stabbed was, like, surrounded with lead, so that kind of screwed up stuff. But he was getting his ass kicked before that.
Yeah, even before that, he was losing pretty bad to Superman Prime. I don't know, man. I just feel like Superman Prime is the new, like, I don't know. He's so annoying. There's no reason for him to be this strong. They're just not. They need a walking Deus Ex Machina fist.
Superman Prime was so bad in that fight, too. Like, I'm okay with quippiness, but I felt like it detracted from my space dramas.
Yeah. In this. And even the way he dies is like, oh, God. Well, he doesn't die, but the way he loses, quote-unquote, to the Guardian, it's like...
The Guardian explodes him.
Yeah, and rips him into another layer of the universe.
It sends him to the...
A different multiverse.
Yeah. It sends him back into the multiverse or something like
that. Yeah, it sends him to one of the other 52. Who knows which one?
Well, he apparently knows which one, because he's like, oh, that's still here. Or something. I can't remember what he says.
Yeah, he's just really fucking annoying from beginning to end.
Yeah.
But I also agree, the thing with Guy Gardner could have been really awesome. You could have brought in Sorenik Natu and had the scene where Sorenik saves him because she's a doctor and kind of like repays him for getting her back into the core. It could have been this really big touching thing, and instead they just got like a Deus Ex Machina amoeba lantern.
Yeah.
Like, where the fuck was this guy the whole time? Out of nowhere. Oh, yeah, by the way, there's also a lantern that's an amoeba.
And he's a thing. Giant amoeba, too.
And we'll beat Despotellus. So there. Because good guys win. Yeah. Like, those two... I mean, there's nothing you could have done about Superman Prime, but you could have done so much with Guy Gardner there getting sick and Sorenik Natu being a doctor. It would have been perfect.
Yeah, that was just very throwaway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have done a lot more with it. It just kind of seemed like, oh, I'm coughing up yellow. Oh, you must have that thing. Oh, well, we have this thing and you're fine.
Well, you know how it played out. It's like in the middle of every sad, dramatic period piece, the like main love interest coughs once and then by the end of the film they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like he kind of did the like cough once and then by the end of the book you're dying thing. They could have, I don't know, escalated that a bit more gracefully.
Yeah. But I will say, even though that was a big disappointment, I think I really like this one much more because it paid off in just little moments with character. Especially that last issue, which is like throwaway, but I love it.
Yeah,
where you get the resolution of each character.
Yeah, I only have like 2-3 notes for... that issue, because it was just like everybody was just until the last panel everyone's just wrapping up their stories, and then you get Mongol at the end there with his ring.
Wait, you get Mongol at the end?
Yeah,
I didn't see that.
Am I the only one that saw that?
Sinestro Corps War Epilogue. What issue is this?
It's 19.
919. Yeah, no, that's not in the end of my issue.
It's not... Do you have... What?
I got the trade paperback, and it just ends with Kyle looking up as Guy Gardner flies away, because he loves to watch him leave.
Yeah, and he's like,
"Wait, what?
That was fun, partner, right?"
Yeah, it's good to be back, partner.
Wait, that's it?
That's where ours ends.
Yeah.
It's like half of an issue.
Okay, then, because I have... Because
you read the actual issue, right?
Well, I have way more pages online. I have the digital one.
Because, yeah, you'll have where... So the War of Light picks up where this left off. So well, you're seeing that build.
If you really want to go through what happens in issue 19, Guy goes to see Ice,
yeah.
I believe is her name. And he's like, "Hey, can we, like... try this again?" And she's like, "All right, cool." And then you have Roth honoring all 437 fallen lanterns who he knows by names, apparently.
Yeah.
Got some other stuff.
He's going to take a shot for every one of them.
he literally is, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to get fucked up.
And then a yellow lantern crashes somewhere, and this guy in a cloak comes to help him. But he doesn't help him, he breaks his neck, and it's Mongol. And now he has the yellow ring. How is it, because I don't understand.
He must have cherry-picked some pages then, because, yeah.
Because
because all we have are, like, the little resolution vignettes. Like, we get the Ireland scene, the Vath, the Eisenmoth, the Xornik, Nato, the Kilowog page, the Salak page, and one with the bromantic buddies.
Huh. That's so weird.
That's like all we get. Huh. I mean, well, this is a fundamental difference between Marvel and DC. Marvel is all about giving you a book that has every issue, right?
Yeah.
So this is an editorial thing that I think a lot of readers don't consider when you buy a trade paperback. If you buy a Marvel trade paperback that's like volume 3 of a run, it will pick up right where volume 2 left off, and it will end right before volume 4, and nothing will change. But DC likes to package its trades into comprehensive stories. So they say if you buy a DC trade, you should get a comprehensive story. So they might not have wanted to put that in here, because then you would feel like you got gypped. Like, it just kind of ends with Mongol, and there's a lack of resolution or whatever. So it's an editorial choice that I know they make, but I didn't realize they cut that much out.
Yeah, that's
so
quite
weird.
A bit.
Because I said Mongol, and you guys said nothing, and I went, did I read ahead? What happened here?
No, because I know that's what happens, but I was like, that didn't happen in here, did it? Huh.
Yeah, that's not in our trade.
I have 24 pages on that last issue.
Do we have like 8?
Yeah, there's not too much. There's
That's so weird.
A bunch of art book and interview stuff at the end of ours.
Huh.
Oh yeah, all that stuff. So anyway, that's
anywho.
those pages are what made me more interested in this comic, just because it gave you the little vignettes of character. Like
relatable stuff.
Well, yeah, and just, you can make a character and make them badass all you want. And then if they just are badass and beat everybody up and have a happy life, it gives you no attachment to them, because you don't see how they deal with struggle. You don't see how they deal with hardship. You don't see any of how they deal with things. And so even though it's just a page each, you get to really see who they are, and you get to see how they deal with the things that they've done and the things that have happened. And it really shows you what they're like as people. And so it's really good just to have that little moment. It's really satisfying. Especially for Guy and Kyle. I love this. I love
that.
Yeah. It's the beginning
of a
bromance. That's
a great scene.
Because and that's the thing, is that bromance is slowly building too.
Yeah,
definitely. Where Guy is the one who goes and gets the picture to save him.
Yeah. Here's a picture, now jump out of this dude.
Which,
that was so gross.
Yeah.
So gross. Did not need it to happen that way.
But then because Kyle went in naked, he comes out naked. And because Guy is a bro, Guy gives him some shorts with his ring.
He does. Good.
I love it.
For him. They are friends.
Good looking out. There's four lanterns standing there, and only one of them thinks to give a brother some pants.
Yeah, right? I did find it interesting that GLC 16, it kind of was happening at the same time as where we left off, where Lethal Force was enabled. It was kind of... Did you notice that? It was like...
Yeah, that actually really bothered me, because I feel like the first trade had really good narrative flow between Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, and this one kind of circled back a little and made it confusing, and it did it in more than one place.
Hmm.
Where it was showing you concurrent events, but it made them look sequential. Just, I mean, you can't really help the layout, but there wasn't anything saying, like, back on blah, blah, blah. So it looked like you're moving forward in time. And I was like, what's happening?
But I think it's because it was mostly divided up strictly, like, if you... This is the other thing with how they're collecting it, right? Like, if you had just been a subscriber to Green Lantern and not Green Lantern Corps... Month to month, the story would have felt cohesive. And if you were just subscribing to Green Lantern Corps and not Green Lantern, month to month, it would have felt cohesive. But because they're concurrent, when you just kind of slap them together, they're not, like, they weren't written to be slapped together like this. They were written to happen at the same time, so you could read Green Lantern Corps through, and that would be, that would flow. And you could read Green Lantern through, and that would flow. But, like, to slap them together and present them in a single package, the problems come up.
Yes, they do. And it, thus is DC.
So what about that then? What about that Lethal Force order? What did you guys think of that?
When it was revealed that it was Sinestro's intentions all along, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Actually, in general, I think it's a good thing for them to have, because they were just getting destroyed and they were just hitting them with gloves or something. I don't know. They just couldn't really fight back as well as they should have been able to.
But you can easily say that all Sinestro did was make the Guardians turn the Green Lantern Corps into the Sinestro Corps.
It's true, yeah.
Because now instead of respecting the Green Lanterns and seeing them as a guiding light of cops, now they're soldiers. Bath even says, we are soldiers, let's get some guns. Let's do some murdering. And people are going to be afraid of that. And it's going to fundamentally change what they are as an organization.
Well, I don't know how true that is. Because, I mean, like, cops carry guns. And the idea is that Green Lantern members are able to overcome fear so that they use, like, this power they have in a judicious manner. And that's what separates them from Sinestro's core. Like, they don't have to kill, and they'll do it if they need to. But we, I think, get the sense that they're better than that.
Yeah, you hope they are.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously not everyone will be, but I mean, they choose capable people. Like, a lot of these folk could go murder people with their bare hands if they wanted. They don't need the ring.
Yeah, one of them has killed people with his bare hands.
And for instance, wasn't Sinestro having people executed on Korrigar?
Yes.
Back in the day? So, like, he was using his power as a Green Lantern to do this. I think... It comes with having the will to not use the power in an evil manner, basically.
Oh, but you just... Oh, you hit it so hard. Because Sinestro wasn't killing people himself, right? He was having other people killed. He was influencing the system to have people be killed. And he was kicked out for it. He was kicked out for the way he ran Korrigar. And now, because... The Guardians back then didn't think killing people was something Green Lantern should be doing. They kicked him out. And all he has done, he's made his point now. All of this is to prove it to the Guardians you kicked me out for doing something that now you're doing. You hypocritic little blue bastards. He has turned them into the thing that they used to hate. Turned them into the thing that they used to talk down to. He's made them into him. And I love Sinestro. Because Sinestro's put up a situation where he will win. It does not matter what happens. He will win. Because either you don't enact lethal force, and his group will win because they will kill and you won't. Or you do enact lethal force, and he will win because he has turned you into him and you have proved his point for him.
I do think he won this, and I think his point was proven, but I think as a general scheme for the core moving forward from here, there's still that issue of, I mean, you can murder someone for good reasons and you can murder someone for bad reasons.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the why and how of doing it that I think matters.
It's interesting, though, because we talk about it in this sense, and it's all okay and dandy, because they're in a position where kill or be killed, right? Except then you look at some of the other heroes in the DC Universe, and they bring in the Justice League here a lot. Almost nobody in the Justice League or the JSA who also shows up would be willing to kill, even under the situation when they're about to be murdered.
Yeah. It's very true.
But, oh... That's why I love Sinestro in this. I love him so much. And I love it because it's him learning a lesson. Because when Emerald Twilight happened and he fought Hal Jordan, he told Hal that either way, Sinestro will win. He told Hal, if you kill me, you'll have become me. And if you don't kill me, I will kill you. And either way, Sinestro will win. And Hal killed him, and Parallax got into Hal, and the Guardians found a way to worm out of it. They made one last ring, they put all of their energy into it, and they gave it to Kyle. And eventually they came back. And Sinestro didn't end up winning because the Guardians and the Corps survived. But Sinestro learned from that. You can't make it about one person.
He found another way.
You gotta make it about the fucking universe. I think that's why I love it so much. And this, I think in the first volume, the enemy is Parallax and all of these random people in the core and fucking weird book holding vampirellas. What the hell's her name?
Lysandrak,
right? Like, it's about shit like that. Yeah, and Green Lantern boxes. But this trait I like, because this is about the villain. This is about Sinestro and how he's manipulating things to come out just the way he wants. That's why I love this one so much. But so what? Let's get into like the different reactions that the individual Lanterns had to that Lethal Force order. Like, I was really surprised. The order came out and Salak with like in 2 seconds murders a dude.
Yeah,
he's fucking brutal.
Well, Kilowog is shocked.
Yeah,
he is just shocked.
He doesn't do it.
No. Vath, on the other hand.
Yeah, Bath makes a fucking automatic weapon and just starts...
He destroys everyone.
And Bray.
That's another one of my favorite scenes, is when they're all just murdering fools. They're just like, yeah, why not?
Yeah, and Sor Nignatu also... I don't know. It's interesting. Because you remember in the first trade, when she was fighting Sinestro, she, like, tries to crush him with a boulder, or, like, no, what was it? Like, shoots at him with a spike of some kind, except it veers away, because she's not allowed lethal force. So it was fine when she was targeting Sinestro, but here, when it actually happens, she's like, oh, that's wrong, I'm a doctor. I joined the Corps to save lives, not take them.
You do kind of get the sense in her first fight. I mean, he's egging her on quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
It was, like, heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Right? And she probably would have regretted killing him.
Yeah, probably.
I think, too, like, she has... She knows who Sinestro is and all the evil he's capable of, so maybe she... Like, I think it's more fair to judge him. He's, like, the fucking head of the Sinestro Corps. Whereas if you're attacking this random person who's wearing yellow,
Who's flashing the signs of the opposite gang?
Yeah, they're probably a bad person, but you don't know that for sure. right? Like, you can't as easily say, oh, they're very evil like Sinestro.
Yeah.
And also, the Guardians didn't say, like, you can kill members of the Sinestro Corps. They were like, you can kill anyone now.
Yeah, it's not just... It's not a just for this fight. It's for whenever you feel like it. So then it's like, who... Well, we get to that later. Who polices the police? That's way later. That's way later. I'm getting... Yeah. That's like stories beyond. But I also loved, while we're talking about all the Green Lanterns murdering everyone, I love when the White Lobe baby is jumping towards Killalong and Sal lights him. He just burns him.
Yeah, he says incinerate.
That's like, I was like, damn, that's cold-blooded. He burnt that baby alive.
It's really interesting to see that side of him, though, because the whole time leading up to this, he looks like a fucking... pencil pusher.
Yeah.
He just looks like a fucking douche. Like, and the first time we see him in Green Lantern Corps, when Guy wants to get shore leave, Salak's just standing there, like, at a computer console saying no. And, like, Sal, in the beginning, gives me that image of, like, that receptionist who sits in front of the executive's office, and you just need to talk to the executive for 5 goddamn seconds, but she's sitting there telling you, no, you can't go in there. It's like, I just, fuck you too. But then you find out on the weekends that that receptionist goes out and murders people in Fight Club.
I never saw Salak as being mild. He seemed like hardcore will do what needs to be done. Because he never, like, minces words. He doesn't have a soft spot like Kilowog. It did not surprise me at all that he just started murdering people.
Yeah, but... I don't know. Maybe I just have that image of him from him coming back from Guy Gardner's shore leave with a rose in his hand. There was not a rose, the flower in his hand that was in the android's hair.
But I think that was less characteristic for him.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Can I just say, can we have a moment of silence for Thos, please?
Yeah.
That was so sad. He was seconds away from being able to murder and fight back, and he just gets run through with a yellow rain. It's like, no.
Like, nothing.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and I go back and forth on that lethal force order, but I like that. I like that they didn't just... I mean, they did use it as, like, lethal force has been enabled. Look at the sick fight we can do now! Because as soon as it happened, there was a 2-page spread.
Oh, but which was fantastic. I'm sorry, the 2-page spreads in this entire volume were fantastic. I loved every single one of them.
So then it also... It wasn't just that, though. Like, if it was a bad writer, it would have been just that.
Yeah.
But they were able to make it about what does this mean for the Corps, what does this mean for the people in the Corps, and what they're doing and why they're doing it. And as soon as lethal force is enabled, you can see all the members of the Sinestro Corps start to run away in fear.
Yes.
Yeah, irony.
Exactly. Emotions.
But I will tell you, the least satisfying part of this was Hank Henshaw's single tear. It's back again.
I felt so sad for him the second
poor,
time, though.
Poor man. He will never die.
He got
all
so
he
close.
Wants to do is die. Yeah, he was so close, and then those freaking manhunters find him.
They should really just take away his second eye so he can't let out the single tear anymore.
I guess.
I don't know.
Poor guy.
Oh.
Trying to think of what else. Oh, did you guys catch in the first issue, did you guys catch the rape comment?
No.
No.
How did I miss rape?
It's capture.
Well, that sounded really bad.
Yeah, that sounded really bad.
Listeners,
let me see here.
Good.
I believe.
Oh, it was Parallax, right?
No, I don't think it was Parallax. It was... Basically, the quote is, capture her alive, we'll be in the mood to celebrate once we have our victory here.
Oh, yeah, they were going to capture, was it Aresia?
Yeah, and I was like, huh?
That was awful.
And then, like, there's a lot of, like, and then I guess Yat, after that, he suggests that she's just following him around because she likes him. And it's just like, Jesus, what is happening in these two panels?
Yeah, because...
like, they're going to rape her, and he's like, oh, you just like me because I'm whatever.
Because I don't think they realize that Arisia is one of the oldest lanterns in the core.
Yeah.
She is old. I'm talking really old. Like, maybe thousands of years old.
Really?
Really.
Hmm.
Yeah, she's been around for a while.
She's a complete fucking badass, by the way. But, yeah, we're just going to throw in that rape comment. Yeah, that did... I forgot about that, because I read this a couple days ago. But I do remember that giving me pause and like, really, guys? Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't need to follow me around, or perhaps you can't help yourself. It's like, what? This one page is insane.
That's one thing, okay? That's Sodom Yat being cocky, right?
It's him being another stupid character that isn't him.
Yeah.
It's him being Guy Gardner.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's perfect Guy Gardner, but not Sodom Yat so much. You're right.
Yeah.
But the rape thing's just like... maybe you could rationalize it by saying, well, they're supposed to be instilling fear, and this is a good way to instill fear. But that would not instill fear in any of these lanterns.
It's almost...
it wouldn't.
No.
It's stupid.
Like that's just a cheap line. Like, there was no reason to use it. It's just to make them look more horrible than they already are.
Yeah. And
I didn't really think it was needed. I was just like, what the hell?
It's sensationalism. And frankly, like, in the context of comics kind of really having a problem with how it portrays some of its women, like, they could have just left that out and been fine. No prob. It was super unnecessary.
And it's not even... you don't even know who says it, because it's off screen. Or it's off screen, Jesus. It's it's off panel.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I could have seen that as characterization, because there are bad people. But we don't see who's saying it. It's not someone we care about, obviously, because we don't even know who they are. It's never, like, followed up on. So it's just floating there. Like, if they were trying to introduce this really bad character and he said that, that might be more understandable. But, meh.
Yeah, it was that scene. There was some stuff in here that I was kind of like, there's a lot of like, what? Like, don't get me wrong, I fucking love this story, but there's some stuff that doesn't make sense. Like, the Guardians say that the prophecy hasn't been disproved, so then why did they ignore, you know, half of their book and burn it and rewrite it?
Yeah.
But, you know, the Guardians are stubborn little blue things, and they kind of suck, so...
and they're stupid and hypocritical, which Sinestro has shown over and over.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point of what's all of everything Sinestro's doing here, is that they're hypocritical little bastards.
Go ahead.
No,
sorry.
You go.
No, because I have to find this. Because I remember I had a note about something that made... I didn't understand it at all.
We'll find it.
It was something that Superboy Prime said.
Ugh.
And I have to... and he's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it might have been a... oh, okay. No, it wasn't something... it was something that Jon Stewart said when he's fighting, like, it's Hal and... no, it's... I'm sorry. It's Kyle and Hal and Parallax as one.
Yeah.
And Parallax tells him that he will die, and John Stewart says, Parallax, right now, I don't have to do anything but stay black.
Yeah, what was that? Oh, yeah.
What the hell does that mean?
I thought it might mean, like, he didn't want to turn yellow, but what?
I mean,
I don't know.
That's not exceptionally out of character for him, but it is a little bit weird.
It's weird, though.
It's weird, but I think it's weird mostly because it highlights a problem with Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart is a token, and I really hate to say that, but he is a token. Think about him and his character in this comic. Did you learn anything about him? Did he do anything really interesting? Like, no. anything at all. He's just a token. And the problem is that lines like that aren't really out of character for him, but you don't know it because it gets 4 lines per 8 issues or something. Right?
It's true.
It's terrible what he gets. And he's... Think of his personality as, like Power Man Light. Like, Luke Cage is pretty street. Right?
Right.
And Jon Stewart grew up on the streets. And he decided that... I mean, we got that issue of him in Power of Ion. He was in a little gang with his friends, and they were going out doing stupid gang violence stuff. He stole his grandmother's car. He was a little hood rat.
Yeah, but at least in that, we got some depth of his character.
Yeah.
Like in this, I'm like, I don't even understand.
No, right, happening. But I'm trying to illustrate that. In that, you can see what his upbringing was. You can see that he is more than a little bit raised in that world where saying something like this is not out of character, you know. And he grows up and he goes to college and he becomes an architect, and then he whitewashes himself to a bit. He does, but this isn't out of character for him. The problem with this is that it highlights just how little he is given.
Well, there's no context for it either.
Yeah,
like if someone had made some race-based comment about him, would have made more sense, but he was just, like, punching Parallax, and he's like, I'm black.
Yeah.
what are you talking about?
And I sat here on this panel and just looked on this page and just looked. I'm like, well, maybe there's, like, he says something about yellow or green or anything, and there is no anything. Nope. He's just like, I don't have to do anything but stay black. And I'm like, all right. If I was Parallax, I'd be like, yeah, that's cool, dude. I mean, can we just fight?
You can be dead and black. That's fine.
That's fine.
I mean, it would have made more sense contextually if he had said stay green. At the very least.
Yes.
So it's just like, I don't know. It was a comment that struck me as really odd, but I passed it off as like garbled writing.
Yeah.
I'm
trying to think of what else do I have here? I really like the scene when they're in, when Hal and Kyle are inside of Parallax. Just a nice little scene that they kind of have.
You don't have to do it alone.
Yeah. I just like that. And I like how the panels at the end of the page, it's them like holding like shaking hands or whatever, and the panels kind of break off and they turn into the big panel of them breaking out of Parallax. It's just because you know how last time we were talking about the panels were a little weird.
Yeah, and last time there was a 2-page spread where we had to turn the comic as you were reading it. Yeah, that was
this is cool. How it should have been done every time because it's creative and I don't have to turn the entire book sideways. It looks great.
It does. It's a really good layout.
Yeah.
And then they rip out of his body.
So nasty.
And then they Ghostbuster Parallax, which is amazing.
Yeah.
They Ghostbuster him.
So I got a question for you, Jen. Since this is like, you haven't read anything of The War of Light, right? This is like your... This is the start to it, and this is also your intro to it.
Yep.
So you get the breakdown of the color spectrum and what everything is and all that kind of stuff. What level on a 1 to 10 of excitometer are you at to see what happens with these other colors and maybe some of the existing characters in the DC universe?
See, that's really hard to answer because I actually know this stuff just because it was such a media craze.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? It was all over the news. Even, like, not comic news, it was in there. And it was all over all the comic sites. So I do kind of get a sense of what's happening. If I had to put myself in a brain space where I didn't know those things, I would say, like, a 5. Like, it seems neat, but it's also hokey.
So good, though.
Like, I know that it's gonna be a good read, but when they're, like, you know, talking about these sentient colors, something about it felt like a little Sesame Street to me. I was just like, that's a nice rainbow. Okay.
I know, and they intro them in order of Roy G. Biv.
Yeah,
they do. I mean,
well, I know, like, that once we actually get to the fighting and, like, the Black Lanterns and everything's all crazy, like, it's gonna be really awesome. But I don't know if I necessarily would have expected that from this color intro.
Yeah, so I gotta say, looking back on it, I am torn. I'm pretty much half and half. I really, really love the new characters that get brought in because of this. Saint yes. Walker is cool.
Yes.
And what is the elephant Blue Lantern that looks like Ganesh?
I
don't remember his name, but he's cool too. Yeah. I love him. He's a badass. And the Avarice guy, the Orange Lantern, is fucking awesome.
Mine.
yeah. He is
Larfleeze.
Great. Yeah, Larfleeze. Oh, Larfleeze. The original characters that they bring in are great. What really bugs me, though, is the ringification of existing characters. Because Hal wears, like, every ring by the end of this.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's a little annoying. That's kind of Geoff Johns giving Hal a blowjob. Hal, I love you. I want you to use every ring because you're awesome and everything.
Is that in? I don't want to get too ahead of us. But does that happen in Blackest Night or is that in Brightest Day?
I don't know. But over the course of this whole storyline that starts here and ends at the end of Brightest Day, Hal wears every color.
Yes. Well, yeah.
And it's stupid. There's no reason. There's no reason.
I mean,
there's no reason. There's no reason. And, like, Kyle gets another color ring that makes sense for Kyle. And I buy that change. Right?
Yeah.
But, like, Hal gets everything.
Well, and then you get other, like, secondary characters that...
Barry Allen, the Flash, gets a ring... There's already the point here where Batman all of a sudden got a yellow ring.
Yeah. You know, that was a little much. I can't remember what ring Barry Allen gets. I feel like it's blue.
It felt like the Green Lantern universe version of adding pockets in the 90s.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I can see that.
I do think the overall what we're going to is... I still feel like it's fantastic. I'm actually more excited now to reread Blackest Night because,
Black Hand. Oh, it's yeah, so dude. Good.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good.
So I'm actually going through and rereading the part where they introduce the colors, and I realize what bothered me was the timing of it because it's still in the middle of the fight and like. Ganthet and Sade come out of nowhere and they're like, hey guys, did you know there's a rainbow?
And yeah. Then, time for exposition.
Did you know there's a rainbow? Okay, then, bye.
Like, you know, and then they're like, oh, by the way, Earthmen, we don't actually know what that means, but follow your hearts. And it's like, what the hell just happened?
If they follow their hearts, they'll all be Violet Lanterns.
But I like that. What exactly is the Blackest Night, Ganthet? And Ganthet's like, we don't know.
I guess they just kind of read about it, and then it was burnt. The book was burnt, and they didn't get a chance to figure it out.
We got two pages in, and then they burned the motherfucker.
Yeah, right. And don't they have a next page where they have all the... Like, it's so funny, because they have most of the characters... that we haven't even been introduced to that are in this double panel of all of them fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do see a couple.
Like, there are a couple that are in Blackest Night.
Oh, never. When I was complaining, I didn't bring up my biggest complaint. Wonder Woman was stupid. When she gets a ring, it's stupid.
Well, we're not even there. If you want to do that, we can do that later.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I listed a couple, and then I didn't even get to the dumbest one. She was.
I mean, you're complaining about things we haven't even read about.
Yeah.
Well,
and then there's people who should get rings but don't, like fucking Darkseid.
Again, you're nerd raging over stuff that isn't even in this comic.
He should have gotten a, okay, what color ring would Darkseid get? This is the problem I get, is when it happens, I hate it and I think it's stupid. But then when I think of a character that's awesome, I think of what color ring he would get. So I hate it, but I fall into the trap that I hate.
Well,
sorry, I'm done. Done with the nerd rage.
Are you gonna be okay?
Maybe. I don't know. I think this is in the first trade. This is what I was trying to express. Knowing where all this was gonna go, I was not happy with it. But this,
I'm still happy with it.
Yeah, but volume two, I love Sinestro in this too much to get over it. Also, does it ever tell us Chornik not to leaving Korugar, or did she just show up? Like, was it just
she just showed up?
Okay. No. I feel like she left at one point. She's like doing surgery on someone, and she's like, I gotta go.
Oh yeah.
She just leaves. She's like, I can't stay here anymore.
Yeah, she does. Okay, never mind. Okay. I was gonna say.
Forgot about that.
I don't even know where it is, but it's somewhere. It's happening. It happened, guys. Trust me. I remember.
So what was your guys' favorite moments in this comic?
Kilowog's family.
Oh,
on Mogo. So sad.
His dead family.
But he's so happy.
That's what Mogo's there for.
Yeah. I like that Mogo, in things we've seen recently, has shown people like these horrifying failures in their life. But then Kilowog comes along and he just has dinner with his family, and that's what he sees.
That's what Kilowog needs.
Yeah.
That's what's important to him.
That says, I think, something good about his mental well-being.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It says that, like, he's gotten his demons out of the way, and he just misses his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to, like, cope. He has no, like, sad background. He's just chilling, being Kilowog. And it's totally him. It's so in character.
Yeah. Calling everybody a poozer when you know it's a word of love.
Term of endearment. Like I said earlier, every two-page spread in this volume was amazing. I thought it was fantastic, every single one of them. If we're going from, like, scene standpoints, when Hal and Kyle are in Parallax, that's great. And I also love the scene that apparently only I read with Guy and Ice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
There.
I love Guy and Ice as a couple. They're great.
I do too. Yeah.
They're just so wonderfully mismatched and perfect for each other.
Yes. Oh, there's one other. Okay, I have notes on this, and this is funny. Where Hal does that announcement for Coast City and says,
"Oh, you guys
got to get out of the city. Like, everyone's going, they're coming here, and they
you
all
get
put
the fuck out."
Yeah, and they put the green lights, and then I put John cries for 20 minutes because they're not leaving. And then the other lanterns are finally putting their pests behind them, and they're coming to Coast City, and John cries again for 20 more minutes. And then there's Hell of a Family, and then Hell of a Town. That was another two-page spread that I really liked too.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Can I ask who has a green light just sitting around?
Everyone in Coast City.
Apparently.
I mean, you could put like a green piece of paper over a flashlight or something. But yeah.
That was here, please move back to Coast City. We'll give you green light bulbs.
It's a repopulation initiative.
Yeah.
I like that. I will say, Oh, I, owning the paper trade, wish that I had the digital, because, like you, John, I think the two-page spreads are amazing. In my version, they get, like, sucked up into the binding.
Yeah.
So that's, like, a really unfortunate part of having the physical copy. And if it was digital, I could see the whole thing, and it'd be so beautiful.
Does it happen in here where you see them changing the sign for Coast City to have it say Coast City, the town without fear?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's the hell of a town. I think that's that.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to Coast City, the city without fear. Hey, what to do about the population? Well, and then there's a bunch of people coming in. I guess we better start counting.
Yes.
Better. Get the fuck to work. I guess my favorite moment was Aizumat falling into the water and being like, fuck you, universe, I'm alive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That is great as well. And of course the whole scene with Guy and Kyle is fantastic.
Yeah. But it's really good because that shows you Aizumat gaining perspective that he didn't have 2 weeks ago when we read the first volume of Green Lantern Corps. In the first volume, he's almost guilty of dereliction of duty so he can get his groove on.
Yeah, right?
Right. Come on, buddy. And now, he's, in a very short period of time, probably because of this giant fucking war, he's gotten some perspective. Be really fucking happy that you're alive.
And I enjoy the art, or how he's drawn better, like, yeah. Now. A little thing that I like.
Yeah, he has much more emotive looks and a much better face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the art was good, right?
The art, I love the art, yeah.
Yeah.
There were a couple parts where I was a little like, and it was all for Sodom Yat's background story as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his kid face.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that.
Was so snarly.
That was so heavy.
That made me so sad. I actually really liked his background story, and I feel like it completely, like, reversed my view of who he was as a character, because he was always, like, kind of snippy and full of himself. Like, who's this dumb rookie? And suddenly we get this background, and it's like, wow, this guy's actually really brave and meticulous and thoughtful.
And you kind of realize, too, it's not just that he's some dumb rookie. He's actually just really, really, really happy to be out there.
Yeah.
Away from his psychotic parents.
Yeah.
Put him into virtual reality of watching them die and get killed.
Well, to promote racism.
Well, who tell him? Yeah, to tell him, they, like, they're preaching to him, be afraid of the outside world, be afraid of the technology we don't have, and be afraid of the things that aren't within your realm of understanding. And they're basically telling him, fear technology and enjoy our quiet farm life.
But
they're using technology to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, this society is like the height of hypocritical.
It's the worst kind of xenophobia you can encounter.
Yeah. It's terrible. I will say there was one issue where I really didn't like it, and this is the last page of the first trade in here, or the first volume in this, like the last page of Green Lantern Corps 16, where Hal is turning around and shouting,
"Oh,
Target was Noah, it's Earth."
Oh,
his face is like all fucked up.
Yeah, what is happening?
I don't know what he's got going on there. But the one thing, as I was scrolling through this looking for another thing to talk about. Not that I were running out of stuff to talk about, but I was scrolling through those pages of the fight between Sodom Yat and Superman Prime, and when Sodom Yat takes the rod and shoves it at Superboy Prime,
and he says,
"Eat this, you bastard!"
And he's like, "Nah,
I love the taste of uranium in the morning." Just the way
it's so weird,
it's so awkward, but the way it's in his mouth is like. It's so weird to say this. The way it's drawn of him eating that uranium is perfect. Because it's just like so...
Yeah.
It's so gross and like awkward. and perfect, because that's what somebody looks like, some smarmy douchebag eating food. It looks like that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm flipping through, and in that first issue again, like chapter 6 or whatever, Sodomyat is, like, he gets this half-page panel, and he's, like, saying, oh, I'm reporting in for duty, but he gets, like, the full, like, lady out of battle treatment, where his clothing's all ripped and he has an exposed midriff. It looks like he's wearing a mini skirt. I think, I can't decide whether I dislike that or just think it's, like, really hilarious.
It was pretty funny. When I saw it, I laughed really hard.
He's also got, like, this dreamy look on his face.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, ladies.
Well, like, the panel before that, Aizumot's sitting there showing off his sick lizard abs.
Yeah.
But everyone's... he looks, like, manly, whereas Sodomyat looks like when the heroine... Like, when Taro the Black Rose gets beat up and, like, every part of her armor starts tearing. That's what we're getting here.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then if you look at, like, the very next panel, he's suddenly, like, way more clothed out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, it's just... It's the ring.
Yeah, but it's just, like, this, like, super, like... I don't know.
This awkwardly sexualized.
Yeah, it's just random.
You know what else I forgot about this is one of the guardians gets all burnt up by Anti-Monitor, and I totally forgot about that. That comes in later.
Is oh, yeah, person? The one that gets all fucking scarred up.
Mm-hmm.
An Anti-Monitor dying gets...
Yes, that's... Go. What does Prime say? Oh, go finish dying somewhere else, loser.
Damn it, Prime.
And then Superboy Prime's just like, I'm going to fight everyone. He is the epitome of giving no fucks at all. He's just fighting every person he can. And then... Anti-Monitor is... told to rise.
Who is that? What's going rise. On? Give me it's the spoilers.
Yeah, who is that?
Who's telling him? I don't know who's telling him to rise, but you see what happens.
I do.
Yeah.
There's a giant column, and sitting on top of the column is a Black Lantern.
Yes.
Oh, it's a Black Lantern? Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Things that happen.
I know who it is, but I won't tell you.
Well, I got Google.
Oh, Google.
Well, to be fair, that whole Blackest Night storyline at the end when they reveal who it is, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy, okay.
It's so, that's the one thing about this era of DC is they just bring back the most random characters, and I always go back to Psycho Pirate.
I love Psycho Pirate.
Yeah, but he's a total rando. Come on, he's totally random.
I mean, for most people, yeah, but you got, I read old comics, John.
Yeah.
He was big back in the day.
But he's still a random, and the leader of the Black Lanterns is very, very random.
Yes, he is. Alright, let's get down and rate this bad boy, alright?
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Jen, you go first.
I will give it a 3.5. I didn't like it as much as last week's because I felt there were some superfluous parts. And I don't know, it just didn't have the same draw. Like, I was really, really excited to read more at the end of last week. Whereas here, yeah, I'll keep reading The War of Light, but it just didn't have the same oomph. I thought that the art was really gorgeous. Like, it found its footing in terms of just coloring, layout. Did a great job. It was a really fun read. So, yeah, 3.5.
All right.
I'm going to go with a 4.5.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Which is my highest rating so far.
The highest rating you've ever given.
The highest rating I've ever given anything ever. That's not true. But I thought the art was great. I thought the writing, for the most part, was very good. Yeah, I just know, I loved rereading it and just knowing where we were going. The only reason it's not a 5 is because there's just some stuff that made me go, I don't understand why they did that, or if they knew this, why didn't they just do that?
Yeah.
So it's not a 5, but it is very close.
All right.
And the Black Lanterns are coming, so.
I'm going back and forth, because I agree with Jen, and I agree with John. And, like, I really love a lot of the details in this. Like, the slow build of the Guy and Kyle bromance starts here, and I really love, like, the little details about Guy as a person, because they don't get the chance to make him seem extra douchey. So instead, out of the 4 lanterns of all the Earthlings, his has a fucking sticker on it from where he went to college. Which is like, really? This is your lantern? This is like, most people revere this. Like, you remember Volume 1 of Green Lantern Corps? That guy had, like, a fucking shrine room to the shit you do, and you just slap a fucking sticker on it?
Yeah.
It's like buying a Ferrari and putting a bumper sticker on the back of it. Like, really, bro? But then, aside from that nice touch, later on, when the, what's her face? I don't know. The one Yellow Lantern who summons dogs. She's like, oh, the animals on your planet are so weak. And he summons Wolverines, which are the mascot for Michigan, which is the college that the sticker, like, the details are cool. For the white guys. But instead, the only detail we get about Jon Stewart is that he's black, which you kind of could have gotten from the art.
That was
so horrifying. Like, the details go back and forth for me, but really, I think I'm going to give it a 4, because I really love the depiction of Sinestro in this. And I feel like Sinestro in these 2 volumes is almost as good of a villain as Darkseid was in the animated series for Superman. The one that we watched for this, where they fight each other, and that awesome scene where Superman throws Darkseid, like, beats the crap out of him, throws him down, and says, here is your leader defeated. You can do what you wish on your planet. And so they help Darkseid up and go heal him.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't beat Darkseid. You can't. Superman can beat the shit out of Darkseid all he wants, and Darkseid will still win. Because that's the position he's put himself in. And Sinestro has put himself here in a similar position. And in doing so, I think has elevated his level of villainy to be par with Darkseid. In that he has masterfully created a situation where he cannot lose. No matter what happens here, he wins. And that's, I love it. I love it, love it, love it, love it. And then that moment when they enable Lethal Force and the Yellow Lanterns of Fear run in fear, because they are not the embodiment of fear anymore. Now it's the Green. I love it. I think that was done great. And for that alone, on top of the amazing art by Patrick Gleason, who I love, I'm giving this a 4. Even with all the problems I have with this trade, it's a 4 for me. So that wraps up our Green Lantern arc, or our extended Green Lantern arc. I don't know what we're going to end up calling it. Maybe I should have come up with a name earlier, because we just ended it. I don't know. Whatever. It'll say it on the website. So we have yet to secure a co-host for next week. We have like 3 people that we're talking to, but nobody's been able to commit yet. So we're going to have John Pinkle back again next week.
Yeah.
We're going to do a 1-shot. We're going to do Wolverine Old Man Logan. This bad boy is from 2003? No. Not 2003. I don't know. It's from the early aughts, or the mid-aughts. By Mark Miller, with art by Steve McNiven. It collects Wolverine 66 to 72 and Wolverine Giant Sized, called Old Man Logan. If you don't know what I was just talking about because I don't have my shit together and it was confusing, go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, click on the button that says Future Shows, and there will be a picture at the bottom of the page of the exact trade we're going to read, with a link to Amazon of the exact trade we're going to read. And if you have a suggestion for what we can read after that, and if you give a suggestion, I will find a co-host and make them record with us the suggestion that you give. Just send us that suggestion to our email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
I like how she didn't even wait for you that time.
Nope, she didn't wait.
I got but this. Knows, on
you know where else you could probably go? You could probably go to the Facebook page and, first of all, like it, and then post something there.
I was so hoping you were going to say the page.
Atomic Powered Supercast is the name of the show. You just look it up.
Yeah, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, or my jam, apsupercast.tumblr.com, because Tumblr loves comics.
And as always, a lot of other weird shit.
Yeah,
that is
like,
true.
Like Guy Gardner naked.
Nope.
I need to send you a couple pictures, John. As always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. iTunes. Until next time, everybody. iTunes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Yeah, I try.
Trying too hard to not be like Guy Gardner's balls while saying iTunes.